Kind of Bhagavad Gita. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 1. Text 18, and we'll also cover 19. They're connected. We'll chant text 18. Pureshu punyo pavanadri kunjeshu. Abhankato yeshu sarit sarasu. Anantalingai samalankriteshu. Chachara tirtha yataneshvananyaha. Pureshu punyo pavanadri kunjeshu. Abhankato yeshu saritsareshu. Anantalingai samalankriteshu. Chachara tirtha yataneshvananyaha. Pureshu, holy places, like Ayodhya Dwarka and Mathura. Punya, piety. Apavana, the air. Adri, hill. Kunjeshu, in the orchards. Apanka, without sin. Toyeshu, in the water. Sarit, river. Sarasu, lakes. Anantalingai, the forms of the unlimited. Samalankriteshu, being so decorated. Chachara, executed. Tirtha, places of pilgrimage. Anyataneshu, holy lands. Ananyaha, alone or seeing Krishna alone. Translation. He began to travel alone. This is Vidura after leaving Hastinapur. He began to travel alone, thinking only of Krishna, through various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwaraka, and Mathura. He traveled where the air, hill, orchard, river, and lake are all pure and sinless, and where the forms of the unlimited decorate the temples. Thus he performed the pilgrim's progress. The pilgrim's progress. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The archa, forms of the Lord, may be considered idols by the atheist, but that does not matter for persons like Vidura or Krishna's many other servants. The forms of the Lord are mentioned here as Ananta Linga. Such forms of the Lord have unlimited potency, the same as that of the Lord himself. There is no difference between the potencies of the archa and those of the personal forms of the Lord. The example of the post box and the post office may be applied here. The little post boxes distributed all over the city have the same potency as the postal system in general. The duty of the post office is to carry letters from one place to another. If one puts a letter in post boxes authorized by the general post office, the function of carrying letters is performed, without a doubt. Similarly, the Archa Murti can also deliver the same unlimited potency of the Lord as when he is personally present. Vidura, therefore, could see nothing but Krishna in the different Archa forms, and ultimately, he was able to realize Krishna alone and nothing else. Pureshu punyo pavanad rikunjeshu apanka toyeshu sarit sarasu anantalingai samalankriteshu chachara tirta yataneshvananyaha. He began to travel alone, thinking only of Krishna, through various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwarka, Mathura. He traveled where the air, hill, orchard, river, and lake are all pure and sinless, and where the forms of the unlimited decorate the temples. Thus, he performed the pilgrim's progress. Isn't there a book like that with that title, Pilgrim's Progress?
Yes.
Yeah?
Studied in first grade.
You did?
Yes, Pilgrim's Progress.
Pilgrim's Progress. What's it about?
It's about the coming of the pilgrims from England to America.
Okay.
And their association with the Native Americans and their tribes trying to establish civilization.
So it's an old European book?
Yes.
Okay, pilgrims. Thus he performed the pilgrim's progress. Long before the Europeans came to America. But same process. So a number of nice points. The role of deity worship and the result of deity worship. And the attempt to become purified in life. So Prabhupada chooses to begin with his purport with discussion about deity worship, because in the verse Ananta Lingai or Ananta Linga, indicating that the forms, the deity forms of the Lord that he saw in the temples, that were decorating the temples, Samalankriteshu, Alanka, Alankara, it's ornament, like in writing, there are literary ornaments, like in this verse where the same consonant is repeated, like in this verse, Anantalingai Samalankriteshu, there's alliteration. Repeating of the same consonant or a metaphor, a simile. Those are called alankar. They're ornaments of literary composition. So the deities were the ornaments of the temples, because with the purpose of going to the temple is not just seeing a nice architectural structure. Although there are some faiths that have that view. One example is the Baha'i faith. And this is like a little nuance, but our ISKCON Delhi temple, for years and years and years, it was in Greater Kailash, which is, you know, it's one of the residential subdivisions. And many, you know, so many people. Delhi's a big city, so many people live in that area. It's just residential. And we had one building in the middle of that residential place. So it was like, you know, people put up with it because they knew they were going on somewhere later on. But very amazingly, the government of Delhi gave some land, to government land, to build the temple. And one of the reasons they gave the government land was just, it was just rocks. Like, you know, a big mound of rock that nobody could develop because it's just big rock. So the government was approached and, you know, whatever happened, and the government gave some rock. And very near to the that piece of government-owned property was also given to the Baha'i faith, and they built the Lotus Temple. And it's, the architecture is beautiful. I've seen pictures of it, and it's so many people go from all over the place to go see the Lotus Temple. But our devotees explained, because what do you find inside? Nothing. It's peaceful. It's a nice place for prayer, but at least in India, people are used to seeing deity. So just boop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop, right over there is the ISKCON temple with beautiful deity worship. So to build that temple, it was, the major part was pulling out the rock, you know, cutting and pulling out the rock and making a place where this is where the temple, and that's the guest house, and that's the cultural center, and so on and so on, just in a big rock formation. And so people go to the Baha'i temple, and then they go to the, you know, it increases the flow of visitors to the ISKCON Delhi temple, because many people go to that beautiful architectural structure, the Baha'i Lotus Temple. So Vidura was not interested in beautiful architectural structures. He was interested in bringing himself closer in his relationship with the Personality of Godhead. One can pray out in a forest or anywhere. So a beautiful architectural structure may inspire prayer, but not only just inspire prayer, because God is everywhere, to focus one's attention upon the deity form of the Lord. So this is within the purport is a nice explanation if we're called upon sometime to explain why deity worship is not idol worship. What's the distinction between deity worship and idol worship? So this is a standard explanation that Prabhupada would use to Western audiences. Supposing, you know, in front of the building, we put a little box, and we painted the box so it looks just like a post office box. And every day, Rupa Sanatan takes the mail out to the post box that's not an authorized U.S. postal box, but just, you know, one that looks like one, and puts his mail in, closes the box, comes back in, and waits for, you know, the bills to be, the checks to arrive at the persons who are, you know, creditors. And then he starts getting calls on the phone saying, you know, when are you making your payment? I'll shut off your electricity. Well, I sent the check. I sent it a week ago. You just be patient, it will come. And it just sits in the box. And it can just sit in the box for, you know, indefinitely. And then perhaps, you know, right next to it or just down the street is one that's authorized by the U.S. Postal Office. And just by putting the letter over there, the guy comes, the postal carrier comes, and he gathers the mail and takes it to the post office. They sort it and they deliver it to the creditors. Here's your check, sir. And it may look the same. But so idol worship is not even generally not looking the same. It's just somebody decides, this would be an interesting something or other. And by mental speculation, they create an image out of their fertile brain. They create an image. In the Old Testament, this forbidden practice of worshiping graven images or idols is presented. So the teaching was there. I can't remember for sure. I think it was Moses. Moses went away, told his people, don't do this, and he came back, and sure enough, they did it. They were worshiping a golden calf. And something that's not authorized by Scripture, just like a post box that's not authorized by the U.S. postal system, isn't going to work. I mean, you can make your own. You can have, you know, UPS or whatever the other ones are. But you have to have your authorized system to pick up the parcel and take it to where it's going. And in the case of God, you can't create your God. And the system of the spiritual potency by which our offerings are then received. It's not out of imagination, but out of a descending. So it's not an ascending, it's a descending process, where according to Scripture, certain materials may be used and certain forms may be established and a certain procedure of worship. And when one follows that descending method, that's archa murti, or the other term is ananta linga. Ananta is, anta means end, and ananta means without an end. Endless, or limitless. The potencies of God are limitless. Who can limit, or who can express the limit of the potencies of God? All scriptures, all religions teach God is unlimitedly powerful. He is omnipotent. In our English language, omnipotent. He has all potencies. And the all potencies of the spiritual reality of God are fully present in the Archa Murti or Ananta Linga, deity forms of the Lord, provided they're authorized forms of the Lord. And so, what was Vidura's intention when he left Hastinapur? He wanted to purify himself. He wanted to increase his qualification to approach the personality of God, to approach Krishna, because he felt he was in a contaminated state, having this terrible association in the royal palace with Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra and Shakuni and Dushasana and bad people. So he was wanting to purify himself. So he went to the holy places. So why are the previous verses, there are so many holy places. Prabhupada gives a very large number. How many holy places? And the specifics of those holy places is sacred rivers or pastimes of the Lord that are performed or combination. And in those holy places, saintly people reside. So a woman goes to the holy place. One not only takes a bath in the sacred river and sees the deity form of the Lord, visits the temples there, but hears from the saintly persons. Through that association, one can become purified and qualified to enter into a direct relationship with the personality of Godhead. So that's what's described here. The role of the Archa Murti forms in the places of pilgrimage. And another important phrase in the verse is the last one. Chachara tirtha yataneshu ananyaha. This, again, anya and ananya. Other and its opposite, no other. Prabhupada has translated it as he fixed his mind on Krishna alone, thinking of Krishna alone. There is an explicit verse, more expanded in Bhagavad Gita, that teaches the same thing. Ananya Cheta Satatam Nitya Smarati. Smarati, Smaran means remembering. like Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Smarana means remembrance. So where the mind is constantly smarati nityashaha, yo mam smarati nityashaha, where one's mind becomes completely fixed. And how fixed? Ananya. No other. Ananya chaita. Prabhupada has translated that as without deviation of the mind. That's the objective. Because now it's, you know, without deviation, the mind is all over the place. Chanchala himana Krishna. The mind is very flickering. It's very like a candle flame in a wind. It's not steady. So chanchala means unsteady. And the mind is unsteady. So how do you steady the mind? Well, take away the wind, turn off the fan. We do that at Arti. You know, it's hot summer, we have past the ghee lamp, so we turn the fan off. Because we don't, you know, want the flame to blow out. So how do you turn off the fan so that the mind becomes steady? We have this force of our past activity and, you know, desires and the conditioning that goes with it, the whole baggage. It's pushing the mind. We do it every day, sit down to chant Hare Krishna, and the mind is going here, going there. And it's not just a matter of like arresting the mind, putting the mind under, okay, you're under arrest. Pull over, buddy. You're under arrest. Mind doesn't respond to that one. It's not just a mechanical effort that works to bring the mind under control. It's purification. And through purification, ultimately, attraction. Attraction to the all-attractive. That's a nice concept. Attraction to the all-attractive. Krishna, the name Krishna means all-attractive. So, if there's an option, we'll make a, you know, real obvious one. And when we finish, we're going to have breakfast. And supposing, you know, one of the in the trays of what you want to take as breakfast, there's mud soup over here. And we have a big sign, mud soup. And then right next to that is khichdi and poppers and lemonade and, you know, fresh fruit. How many persons are going to take a scoop of mud soup? I don't think anyone. Maybe out of, why would they have mud soup? Try a little bit of mud soup. Why would they put it out there for display? But most likely, persons would even experiment with it. It's just that. So when there's something more attractive and something less attractive, it's more attractive. It's not a difficult decision. What to speak of? All attractive. It's not a difficult decision. Which would you rather have? All attractive, thank you. All attractive, thank you. So the mind can become steady when the mind is purified and in contact with the all-attractive. Then the mind can become ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityasya. Starts off really great. That verse is strong. Tasyaham tasya, unto such a person, aham, I am sulabha. Labha means to obtain. And su-labha is very easily to obtain. The opposite is dur-labha, very difficult to obtain. Tasyaham su-labha partha, O Arjun. Nitya yuktasya yoginaha. Nitya Yuktasya Yoginaha. To Nitya can mean literally it's eternally. So Prabhupada has translated it as regularly. You know, it makes it light and easy and user friendly. Nitya Yuktasya Yoginaha. For the devotee, if this is what they want to do regularly or without exception. The Ananya Chaita is, that's from chapter 8 and is describing the how you attain the Supreme. So Vidura is on this pilgrim's progress. He wants to attain the Supreme. He doesn't just want to colonize, he wants to attain the Supreme. Of course, the colonialists, they also came for freedom of religious expression. But, you know, they also had a bunch of other things in mind, too. You know, like setting up shop and, you know, using the resources of this new place. And the skills and the tools and the animals and the plants and all the stuff they brought with them on those boats. They could, like, you know, start it all over again. So, it's a strong word, Ananya. Can anyone think of another place in Bhagavad Gita where this word Ananya is used in a prominent way? Yejana Paryupasate. Yogakshema Vahamyam. Very good. There's another one. Chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. In chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, one of the questions asked by Arjuna to Krishna is, please describe what is knowledge and the object of knowledge. Jnanam is knowledge and Gyayam is the object of knowledge. So Krishna is the object. And what's the symptom of knowledge, just like last night there was some discussion about education of children, you know, and how important it is to go for a PhD and encourage our children to become really well educated. But real education or real knowledge, you look at that list of what Krishna says is knowledge, and it's not, you know, MA, MS, PhD, or any of those things. It's characteristics or qualities. Elevated qualities, that's education. That's the symptom of one who is in knowledge. So, out of the whole list of all of the items, there's one that Prabhupada identifies is the principal characteristic from which all other items of knowledge flow. And that has this word ananya in it. Mai chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. So it's avyabhichari, it's undivided bhakti, but also ananya bhakti, like double strong, you know, like they have these plastic containers, it's lock. You can't spill because it's lock. Nothing can come out. So there's nothing inside the character of one who's in knowledge except Mayi, that's unto Krishna, first person singular, unto me, Mayi cha ananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini, undivided devotion unto the personality of Godhead is the principal item of knowledge. And one who has that, one has everything. One who has that has everything. There's another similar phrase in the Bhagavatam. There's so many, but one very nice one is in the fifth canto Srimad Bhagavatam, prayers by the residents of Jambudvip is the chapter, fifth canto. And in that chapter, there's a description of Lord Nrisimhadev. And Lord Nrisimhadev, it says in the fifth canto, his spiritual resonance, he descended and appeared before Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu. But before he appeared before Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu, he has his residence in Hari Dham. And Prahlad is described as being situated in Avyadhana Ananya Bhakti Yogena. Because of this quality of Prahlad, the personality of God had appeared. And so Ananya Bhakti, there's that phrase again, Ananya Bhakti, undivided devotion, or fixed devotion, unmixed devotion, and Avyavadhana, it's when you differentiate things. So that's Vyadhana, this is Avyavadhana, it's undifferentiated, or again, unmixed and undivided devotion. That's Prahlad. And because Prahlad Maharaj had that quality, he was always peaceful. He was always peaceful even when he was being tortured or put into terrible difficulty. He was peaceful. He remained undisturbed. He was very happy. Even the external was different. And because he was in that state of full shelter in Krishna, or Hari appeared and took care of the disturbance. Just a little boy, just 5-6 years old, just beginning school, and very difficult situation, but because his internal situation was fixed, he was very peaceful and very protected, very happy. And that's the place that Vidura achieved, because he was in this tempestuous situation in Hastinapur. Nasty. He left. And to purify himself, he went to these different places. The verse is describing also where the air, the hill, the orchard, the river, and lake are all pure and sinless. So natural settings where forms of the Lord are presented and being worshipped by saintly persons. And he was gradually purifying himself to the point where his mind was completely fixed upon Krishna. That's what he wanted to achieve, and that's what he achieved. He took the right means. He became completely purified. And that's even before he met Maitreya. So, coming attractions. Vidura meets Maitreya. Stay tuned, folks. For the next episode of Pilgrim's Progress, starring Vidura and Maitreya Muni. Okay. Any comments or questions? Yeah?
Guru Maharaj, we see in Vidura's case, when he had this difficult circumstance that he had to deal with in Hastinapur, he chose that, right now I don't have the capacity, let me get purified, at least if he was feeling internally that way, and come back and then address it at a later point, if need be.
Well, let's preface that by saying he was there for a very long time. He didn't jump. And it was right at the point where not only a war was going to begin, but Duryodhana was going to kill him. Just like he had already tried with Krishna. Seize him. And, you know, it's not just like put him in jail and, you know, give him a hard time. It was finish him. Duryodhana is that kind of person. So to not have that kind of a confrontation, before anything happened, he left. He took it at that stage, I've tried my best. Krishna is giving me this reprieve. I don't have to, as Bhishma had to, make a decision. Because I've been maintained by the royal family, it's my obligation religiously. I mean morally, but even religiously, it's my dharma, it's my duty to act on their behalf. Even though I don't agree with them and their principles and, you know, their conduct, I'm obliged. Because, so one should leave such a situation rather than continue in such a situation. He didn't. Bhishma stayed. So he was obliged. Vidura was relieved of having to make that decision. So when he left, ceremoniously, he stood up with his bow and arrows and placed them by the door, signifying, I don't have to make this decision. You can use my bow and arrow as you like. He was like, you know, liberated from that difficult decision to make. And let me proceed with the effort of purification in life. It's not, in the, later in that same chapter, in the 13th chapter of Canto 1, when Vidura comes back, he advises Dhritarashtra the same. And then there's this very nice section that describes different stages of detachment. And one is giving something up out of frustration. That's at the very bottom. It's not recommended. In Dhritarashtra's case, it was recommended because he was in so much doo-doo, he really didn't have the opportunity to do anything more than that. He was too stuck. But then searching for knowledge with so jnana, vairagya, and then naratam, Nara Uttama, the topmost, is the stage that Vidura attained and was aspiring to attain. Krishna's associate, because it was discussed. Prabhupada brings the question. When Vidura left, why didn't he just go to Krishna? He was, you know, he was dear to Krishna. And he wanted, you know, wanted a superior situation or purification. Why didn't he just go to Krishna? And the answer Prabhupada provides is that he felt he was contaminated. And you can't come before Krishna contaminated. So he needed to cleanse himself to qualify. Tesham tvantikatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvanva moha nirmukta bhajante mam brita prata. That verse is quoted, where Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that to engage oneself in devotional service with great determination and faith, there's a prerequisite. That's one is purified, freed from all papa, all sin, and fixed in purifying activity. Then one can be fixed in determination. So he wanted to have that prior qualification. He saw it as Krishna's mercy. So, your question.
It's answered.
Okay.
What I was going to say was that I was thinking of Hanuman's situation, and he was in a difficult circumstance, and he decided to take on double determination to try to find Sita, and the contrast seems to be the long period of having tried and tried and tried, and then ultimately knowing that his own life is at risk.
Well, Hanuman had an assignment. It's this specific assignment. Notify Sita. Because she may she's in great difficulty. Give her confidence and insurance. Ram will be coming soon. Please don't harm yourself or allow any harm to Ram will come soon. Yes.
So Vidura left because he felt he needed to purify himself, and Bhishma Dev stayed there with the Kauravas, and yet he was able to remember Krishna at the time of death. And how was that?
Krishna gave him special mercy, and also that they. Through Bhishma Dev, Krishna wanted to show. Prabhupada writes in the first canto, Krishna wanted to show that whoever you are, even your grandfather Bhishma, if you don't give protection to women, as Bhishma Dev didn't when Draupadi was being disgraced, finished. All your merit is taken away. Krishna wanted to show that. To elevate the importance of protection of women. So Krishna did that. He used Bhishma as the instrument for that. But it's also described when Krishna came, he wanted to show the world how elevated is Bhishma. Even I can't pacify Yudhisthira, but Bhishma can. This is how great is Bhishma. So the intimacy of the relationship was intact, despite these, apparent discrepancies. Why Bhishma Dev remained silent when Draupadi turned to the elders and said, "You please determine, in this assembly, you are the learned persons. Is it possible for my husband to gamble me in a gambling match? Is that possible?" They couldn't say anything. Or they didn't say anything. They remained silent. Vidura spoke. You can't do that. As far as principles of Dharma, that comes higher. Yes, he may have, he's in this competition thing, and he's a Kshatriya, and he can't, say no to competition. But this is higher. He can't gamble his wife. And, so it's the whole thing is bogus. She's not the property. It can't be done. Can't be done. Restore order, Dhritarashtra. You're the king. I'm your minister. You're the king. Restore order. He remained silent. And Vidura's words brought, intense anger upon Duryodhana. Seething with anger. Bhishma remained silent. But it was part of Krishna's plan. How can a devotee of Bhishma's caliber not say the obvious? You can ask some of our children and they would say the obvious. Why Bhishma didn't say the obvious? Part of Krishna's plan. And an even subtler or perhaps deeper perspective is Krishna wanted to satisfy Bhishma's desire as his dear devotee. He wanted to see Krishna in that spirit of protecting Arjuna by raising the broken chariot wheel and charging to smash Bhishma. Violating his own word. How dear to Bhishma is one's own word. To violate his own word just to protect his devotee. Bhishma wanted to see that, so Krishna reciprocated. And he concluded the whole thing by showing, just see how exalted is Bhishma Dev. He can pacify when I can't. He can pacify Yudhisthira. How exalted is... So don't think of Bhishma as anything other than... In other words, Krishna's messages. Don't think of Bhishma as anything other than the most exalted personality. Although these discrepancies are there, the most exalted, so therefore he can fix his mind upon Krishna. He acted as Krishna's instrument to teach moral lessons. We shouldn't imitate Bhishma. Anything else? Yes.
Let me ask you a question about the origins of the Brahma Samhita.
The origins of the Brahma Samhita. Can we stay on topic?
Okay.
Let's stay on topic. Anything else on topic? Yes.
More also, reading the Arisori's diary entries, this reminds me of the situation that was confronting ISKCON with some parents feeling that their children had been brainwashed. And how Srila Prabhupada handled the situation that this whole process is actually for the purification of our minds so that they become fixed upon the proper thing. And in contrast, he showed, he welcomed actually the contention because he knew it would give him a public arena to.
Oh, play. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so.
He was fired up. Ooh. Fired up. I was commenting to Chakri this morning. Who made the hat for Srila Prabhupada? Somebody knit the hat. Huh? Who made it? Did she? Your wife made it? So I was commenting to Chakri, it looks like, you know, very fashionable hat. Like a saffron beret. And then the thought went, there's the green berets. And the green berets, Chakri said, oh, very strong. Right? Very strong, very, you know, to be a green beret, that's like, whoa. You know, intense kshatriyas. And here's saffron beret. Intense fighter on behalf of Krishna. Very fashionable. So Prabhupada took this opportunity as, you know, put on his saffron beret and let's lead the charge. He was coaching the devotees how to deal with the media. And, you know, in the courtroom, and what they should say. It was intense. Ooh, I won't even repeat what he said. He said, tell them what kind of society you have. Mm-hmm. I won't even repeat it. It was very heavy. It was, you know, he was not intimidated. He was fired up. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.